Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 1, Text 4. Questions by the sages. Naimishe namisha chetre.
Naimishe namisha chetre.
Rishaya shonakadaya.
Rishaya shonakadaya.
Satram svargaya lokaya.
Satram svargaya lokaya.
Sahasra samamasata. Naimishe nimisha chetre.
Naimishe nimisha chetre.
Rishaya shonakadaya.
Rishaya shonakadaya.
Chatram svargaya lokaya.
Chatram svargaya lokaya.
Sahasra samamasata.
Sahasra samamasata.
Naimishe nimisha chetre. Rishaya shaunakadaya.
Rishaya shaunakadaya.
Chatrang svargaya lokaya.
Svargaya lokaya.
Sahasra samamasata.
Sahasra samamasata.
Naimise nimisha chetre.
Naimise nimisha chetre.
Rishaya shaunakadaya.
Vaishnavis. Anyone? Naimishe. In the forest known as Naimisharanya.
In the forest known as
Naimisha Chetre. Spot which is especially a favorite of Vishnu. Who does not close his eyelids. Rishaya. Sages. Shaunaka Adaya. Headed by the sage Shaunaka. Satram, sacrifice. Svargaya, the Lord who is glorified in heaven. Lokaya, and for the devotees who are always in touch with the Lord. Sahasra, 1,000. Samam, years. Asata, performed. Translation purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Once in a holy place in the forest of Naimisharanya, great sages headed by the sage Shaunaka assembled to perform a great thousand-year sacrifice for the satisfaction of the Lord and his devotees. Report. The prelude of the Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken in the previous three shlokas. Now the main topic of this great literature is being presented. Srimad Bhagavatam, after its first recitation by Srila Shukadev Goswami, was repeated for the second time at Namisharanya. In the Vyasvaya Tantra, it is said that Brahma, the engineer of this particular universe, contemplated a great wheel which could enclose the universe. The hub of this great circle was fixed at a particular place known as Namisharanya. Similarly, there is another reference to the forest of Namisharanya in the Varaha Purana, where it is stated that by performance of sacrifice at this place, the strength of demoniac people is curtailed. Thus, the Brahmins prefer Namisharanya for such sacrificial performances. The devotees of Lord Vishnu offer all kinds of sacrifices for his pleasure. The devotees are always attached to the service of the Lord, whereas fallen souls are attached to the pleasures of material existence. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that anything performed in the material world for any reason other than the pleasure of Lord Vishnu causes further bondage for the performer. It is enjoined, therefore, that all acts must be performed sacrificially for the satisfaction of Vishnu and his devotees. This will bring everyone peace and prosperity. The great sages are always anxious to do good to the people in general. And as such, the sages headed by Shanaka and others assembled at this holy place of Namisharanya with a program of performing a great and continuous chain of sacrificial ceremonies. Forgetful men do not know that the right path for peace and prosperity. However, the sages know it well, and therefore the good of all men, they are always anxious to perform acts which may bring about peace in the world. They are sincere friends to all living entities. And at the risk of great personal inconvenience, they are always engaged in the service of the Lord for the good of all people. Lord Vishnu is just like a great tree, and all others, including demigods, men, siddhas, charanas, vidyadharas, and other living entities, are like branches, twigs, and leaves of that tree. By pouring water on the root of the tree, all the parts of the tree are automatically nourished. Only those branches and leaves which are detached cannot be so satisfied. Detached branches and leaves dry up gradually despite all watering attempts. Similarly, human society, which is detached from the personality of Godhead, like detached branches and leaves, is not capable of being watered, and one attempting to do so is simply wasting his energy and resources. The modern materialistic society is detached from its relation to the Supreme Lord, and all of its plans which are being made by atheistic leaders are sure to be baffled at every step. Yet they do not wake up to this. In this age, the congregational chanting of the holy names of the Lord is the prescribed method for waking up. The ways and means are most scientifically presented by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and intelligent persons may take advantage of his teachings in order to bring about real peace and prosperity. Srimad Bhagavatam is also presented for the same purpose, and this will be explained more specifically later in the text. Om Jnanat Grandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chaksur Nivitamina Tasmai Sri Gurve Namaha Panchakopa Tribhischa Kripa Sindhu Vibhacha Patitano Pavanibhya Vaishnavibhya Namo Namaha. Somebody nicely covered the Bhagavatam. Thank you, whoever did that. Oh, thank you. Okay. My first question reading this verse is, who is speaking? Who's speaking?
Right now, Sutta Goswami.
Is it Sutta? Or is it Vyasadeva?
Vyasadeva, compiler at the end.
Yeah, but Sutta Goswami doesn't really start speaking yet. Until actually chapter 2. It seems as though these first three verses, Prabhupada says this is the introductory material, actually Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says it's spoken by Vyasadeva. So, and then what we see is the sages very soon will start asking their six questions, which are the basis of the Bhagavatam, and then in beginning chapter 2, Sutta Goswami begins speaking. And then Shukadeva Goswami actually does not enter until canto 2, right? Yeah. So in other words, it's and then it's always interesting to me that there's just so many Well, that was an interesting question, which reminds me of a story told by this one when that sage asked this one, and he, so sometimes you get, you know, three or four levels of who's, and it becomes a little bit hard to follow. So I always try to think about, first of all, well, who's speaking here? Anyway, the sages are performing the sacrifice. Why are they doing this? Because it's the onset of Kali Yuga. They know that this earth is going to go through a difficult time, that there's going to be great suffering to humanity, and therefore they're trying to offset the effects of Kali Yuga by doing this 1,000-year sacrifice. And Prabhupada is pointing out that they picked Naimisharanya because it's a sacred place, very auspicious for sacrifice, and there's a couple Shastic references to it. So we first of all hear about a great sacrifice. Now, to casual reader, I was thinking if somebody first picked up the Srimad Bhagavatam and they hear about sacrifice, is that appealing to people? Maybe not. You know, most people don't really want to hear too much about sacrifice. I was thinking about this, especially in our modern world, because there's so much emphasis on personal gratification. I was thinking one of the terms that was coined was the me generation. Said that the baby boomers were nicknamed the me generation, and as one, actually it's by an author named Tom Wolfe, and as he presented it, do they perceive narcissism? The me generation in the United States is a term referring to the baby boomer generation and the self-involved qualities that some people associate with it. But this is really the nature of everyone in this material world. They tend to be very self-absorbed and self-involved, not so much interested in sacrificing for others. Now, it's interesting that our new young adults are called millennials. And the millennials are also characterized, as one author put it, the trend on an emphasis of extrinsic values such as money, fame, and image, less emphasis on intrinsic values. So I'm not sure whether the generation has changed that much or whether basically materialistic people are just self-absorbed in all generations at all times. But this is something that has definitely been noted as cultural phenomena, that there tends to be less and less interest in greater causes, things outside oneself. Now, of course, we do see some changes in that. We see a lot of young people now are involved in many things like ecology and, you know, global warming, things like that. But of course, this can also be self-interest. I'm worried about myself living well on this planet and having a good life. But they may also be interested in others. I was thinking today we have the selfie generation, right? I mean, every situation you're in, every event demands that you take a picture of yourself, right? Or it doesn't exist, I guess. It never happened unless you've taken a picture of yourself, you know, with your camera. So that's basically becomes a reality, you know, whatever is posted on the on your Facebook page or your, that may even be dated now. It's probably other things that are more current anyway. But regardless of whether people appreciate the idea of sacrifice or whether they want to be more absorbed and just enjoy life, the reality is that everyone sacrifices. There's no escaping sacrifice. Even the most materialistic person must sacrifice something for sense gratification, must obtain money, must work, must do something. If you want to be any kind of profession, whether it be a businessman, a doctor, a lawyer, you name it, there has to be some sacrifice, some work, education, whatever. And so this is a fact. Let's think of another example. Sometimes you see some immigrant families, and they work very hard. They start a little business, and all the family members work. They all sacrifice. They're all working very, very hard, and eventually, you know, they gain a little money and a little position, or they've developed their business. And even in spiritual life, every path has some practice, some sadhana. Whatever you choose, any religion, any spiritual path, it has to be something that one does. There's some activity, whether it's just prayer, or whether it's meditation, or whether it's doing yoga exercises. There is something there that one has to give up to gain something greater. Now, we know from the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam that the real purpose of all sacrifice is not really for personal enhancement, but to give pleasure to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And when Krishna is pleased, when the Supreme is pleased, all blessings occur for all of humanity, individually and collectively. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada first refers to this, and he's referring to these verses in the Bhagavad Gita that describe sacrifice to Vishnu. I assume this is reference to Bhagavad Gita 3:9-11, and Prabhupada really, Krishna speaks about this very clearly. Krishna says, work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed, otherwise work causes bondage in this material world. Therefore, O Suna Kunti, perform your prescribed duties for his satisfaction, and in that way you will always remain free from bondage. Then, verse 10, in the beginning of creation, the Lord of all creatures sent forth generations of men and demigods along with sacrifice for Vishnu, and blessed them by saying, be thou happy by this yajna, because its performance will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation. So not just living happy in this material world, but eventually getting out of this material world. Then it says, the demigods being pleased by sacrifice will also please you, and thus, by the cooperation of men and demigods, prosperity will reign for all. In the purport to verse 3:10, Prabhupada really nicely summarizes, basically tells us the purpose of life in one sentence here. The Lord created this material world to enable the conditioned souls to learn how to perform yajna sacrifice for the satisfaction of Vishnu, so that while in this material world they can live comfortably, without anxiety, and after finishing the present material body, they can enter into the kingdom of God. And then Prabhupada says, I like this last line, he says, that is the whole program for the conditioned soul. So that's it. As conditioned souls, we offer sacrifice to Krishna, we become pleased, we're able to live happily within this world, but more importantly than that, we will eventually become liberated and be able to go back to the kingdom of God. You know, so that's really the purpose that's stated here. And throughout the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says this repeatedly, that sacrifice is meant, everything that we do is meant for the satisfaction of Krishna, for the Lord. In 9:27, Krishna says, yat karoshi yat ashnasi yat jahoshi didasi yat yat tapasyasi kontaya tad karushu madarpanam. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, whatever austerities you perform, do that, O Son of Kunti, as an offering to me. So that is the, not just the recommendation, that's the strong instruction of Krishna. He's instructing Arjuna this way and instructing us in this way, that we need to basically offer everything back to Krishna. That is our sacrifice. Now, another very important point that Srila Prabhupada makes in the purport is that the sages are performing the sacrifice not just for personal reward. They're doing the sacrifice for the greater good. And the benefits or the results of the sacrifice, you know, whenever there's a sacrifice, like a fire jug you've done, there's some benefit, right? I can't think of the word for it. What's the word? The benefit that comes out of a sacrifice. You know what I mean. Isn't there a word or a Sanskrit term? Okay. Anyway, that's there. So they're not offering the benefit of the sacrifice for themselves to be happy, but for the benefit of the world to try to counteract the effects of Kali Yuga and the subsequent suffering of all of humanity. So one might ask, how would a fire sacrifice somewhere in India benefit the whole world? Well, they're doing their little thing over there. How's that going to help everybody? Srila Prabhupada gives a very, very nice example that we've all heard probably many times about watering the root of the tree. When waters the root of the tree, all the branches and leaves are nourished. We all understand that. You can't just spray water on the leaves, you have to water the root, then everything comes up through the roots, through the branches, to the leaves, flowers, everything becomes nourished. Similarly, the root of all existence, the source of everything, is Krishna. Krishna is the creator, the maintainer, basically the upholder of everything in this world. Therefore, as the root of existence, when he's pleased, everything prospers. Everyone else becomes pleased, becomes happy, becomes satisfied. So that is, of course, the whole point of the idea of offering yajna to Vishnu or to Krishna. Then when he's pleased, everything becomes in order. And we understand that, that the, and we see many examples, the story of Elpritu and after King Bena, that, you know, when there isn't sacrifice, when the sacrifice is interrupted, the world, the earth, withholds, right? So in other words, you know, when King Bena took took control, he stopped all sacrifice, and therefore the earth stopped producing, right? Mother Earth just withheld everything. And then it was Prithu, right? And when Prithu resumed control after the Brahmins did away with Bena, then, you know, immediately, of course, he was at first he was angry at Mother Earth, but then he understood. He understood what had happened and realized that, you know, by reestablishing religious principles, then the earth produces, and as the Bhagavad Gita said, the demigods put everything in order, and everything comes into being as it should. Prabhupada also mentions, I thought was very interesting, he says, in modern society, the branches and leaves are detached, and thus most people are not closely connected to God or to Krishna. In the same way that the leaf or the flower, if it's not connected to the tree, it will soon dry up. We all see that very simple example. A leaf can be on a tree for years and years. You cut it off, how long does it last? Within days, it shriveled up, usually. It's dried up. You know. Some leaves, you know. Anyway, won't get into that. But the idea is that eventually they'll dry up. And thus, human beings also dry up if they're not connected to Krishna. Dry up both materially and spiritually. If there's no connection with God, there will not be material prosperity, will there not be benefit to society, but even more importantly, there will not be the spiritual connection. And people will lose that, you know, that spiritual relationship with God. And no one can really be happy without that spiritual connection. That's really the point. So, one might ask, we can understand why the sages are doing this, but why are they doing this? Why would they do this severe austerity? They were going to do a 1,000-year sacrifice, right, for the good of the world. Why would they do this? Srila Prabhupada says in the purport, explains this. He says, therefore, the good of all men, they, the sages, are always anxious to perform acts which may bring about peace in the world. They are sincere friends to all living entities. And at the risk of great personal inconvenience, they're engaged in the service of the Lord for the good of all people. So the devotee is friend to all. The devotee is always trying to work for the welfare of others. Bhagavad Gita, in the 12th chapter, 13th verse, talking about the qualities of devotee. One is Advaishta Sarvabhutana Maitra Karuna. The devotee is non-envious towards all living entities and a kind friend. So this is the position of the devotee, the kind friend to everyone. And not just to their friends, but even to their enemies, right? I mean, it's easy to be kind to your friends, people that like you, you like them, we have a nice relationship. Most of us can do that pretty easily. But what about people that are so-called enemies? Actually, the devotee does not have enemies. The devotee does not see others in this way. In fact, King Yudhishthira was famously called the Jata Shatru, one whose enemy was never born. In other words, here's the man who's leading a battle where millions of people are killed, but yet it said his enemy was never born. How is that? Because he did not consider anyone his enemy. He always wanted the welfare of everyone. He wanted best for everyone, and he took the responsibility as a great king that he was responsible for the welfare of everyone. Now, we may not be able to do that, we're not in a position of King Yudhishthira, but, you know, to the degree that we can for those around us, we should try to exemplify that to whatever degree is possible, to try to avoid seeing friends and enemies, but trying to see how can we benefit everyone. After all, in Kali Yuga, how many people are devotees? Not so many. Most people are materialistic. Most people are not devotees. But yet, the devotee doesn't disdain those people. You know, we don't say, oh, well, we don't like these people. No. We try to show kindness and compassion to everyone, regardless of how fallen so-called they are or how far away they may be from Krishna. The kindness of the devotee is to try to somehow connect them with Krishna in some way, whether that's just hearing the holy name or taking some prasadam or however it may be, or even just feeling, having a favorable impression upon a devotee. Even that's an important thing for a person to gain some little benefit. So the consciousness of the devotee is, how can I benefit others? How can somebody else come a little closer to Krishna, even if it's a small step? The Vaishnava is described as paradukaduki. And Prabhupada says, because in the purport 4647, he is paradukaduki because although he is never distressed in any condition of life, he is distressed to see others in a distressed condition. That's paradukaduki. Why is a devotee not distressed? Because, well, a very advanced devotee anyway, is always feeling connected with Krishna, always seeing, feeling, this is one of the six symptoms of surrender, to always feel Krishna's protection. If one is always feeling one's Krishna's protection, then one doesn't feel distress. The body may have distress, the mind may have distress, but the devotee understands this is not me. I, as the spirit soul, I am in a loving relationship with Krishna. But even a very, very advanced devotee will become distressed upon seeing the suffering of others. So this is very important. It's not that the devotee becomes cynical or becomes disdainful or becomes condescending towards those, to the non-devotees, because they're suffering. They may not even know or admit that they're suffering, but they are. We know that they're suffering, or they soon will be suffering. Therefore, we need to have that mood of compassion. Now, it's also interesting that while the devotee is very compassionate and actually very tolerant towards oneself, we don't necessarily tolerate harm to others. I always want to mention this, because someone always say, yeah, but what about, okay. So anyway, Srila Prabhupada says in a purport, 4.24.22, a devotee should be tolerant and should be very much compassionate toward others. For example, if he suffers personal injury, he should tolerate it. But if someone else suffers injury, the devotee need not tolerate it. The whole world is full of violence, and a devotee's first business is to stop this violence, including the unnecessary slaughter of animals. And a devotee is friend not only of human society, but all living entities. He sees all living entities as sons of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Suhrida sarvadehinam. A true devotee is friend of all living entities. Krishna claims in Bhagavad Gita to be the father of all species of living entities. Consequently, the devotee of Krishna is always a friend to all. And this begins to explain where this quality of compassion comes from. In other words, it's not just an artificial thing, oh, I should feel compassionate, because it's one of Krishna's qualities. Krishna's quality is that he is the friend to all living entities. In the famous peace formula in Bhagavad Gita 5.29, it's described that Krishna is the beneficiary of all sacrifices, he's the lord of all the planets, and Suhridam Sarvabhutanam, the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities. So a purified living entity possesses the qualities of Krishna in minute degrees. Since Krishna is the friend to everyone, the devotee of Krishna is also everyone's friend. Because we have some of those qualities of Krishna, and we also want to please Krishna in that way, by exhibiting those qualities which are dear to him. And of course, Prahlad Maharaj is one of our best exemplars of this quality of compassion. We saw his great compassion to his father. When Lord Nrsingadev asked him to accept some boon, he says, I'm not a merchant, I don't want anything from you, I'm just your servant. He says, no, you must take something. He says, well, then at least deliver my father. His father, who had tried to kill him in countless ways, Prahlad Maharaj asked that he be given liberation. So this is the great example, and of course, Prahlad said, I am not at all afraid of material existence. My concern is only for the fools and rascals who are making elaborate plans for material happiness, maintaining family, society, and country. I am simply concerned with love for them. So this love for others who are suffering, to relieve the suffering of others, is the basis of Vaishnava compassion. So spiritual compassion is true kindness. And it differs from material compassion, which might be based on good deeds or nice words or friendliness or even philanthropy. And these things may be in the mode of goodness. These may be all beneficial activities, and it's not that we shouldn't do these or should discourage people from doing these. But we also understand that it's not the highest spiritual compassion. Compassion also differs from merely empathy or sympathy. These are other words sometimes that are used. Because what compassion actually means is not only seeing the suffering of others, but it means having the knowledge and the willingness to try to relieve that suffering. That's the compassion that Srila Prabhupada showed us. The compassion to give up his situation at advanced age, to come to America, hardly knowing anyone, no money, no resources, no support, no friends, to come here for one purpose only, to try to relieve the suffering of the conditioned souls. So he had that compassion and he had the knowledge. He was empowered by Krishna. He understood the Siddhanta of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, and he had willingness. He had incredible will to continue despite anything, to somehow please his guru and please Lord Chaitanya in helping the conditioned souls to understand Krishna consciousness. So Krishna is very kind and compassionate to all conditioned souls. And of course, he manifested this most strongly in the appearance of Lord Chaitanya. And Prabhupada concludes his purport with his last paragraph explaining the position of Lord Chaitanya as the most merciful incarnation, Namo Mahavaranaya. He inaugurated the Sankirtan movement to deliver all the jivas in Kali Yuga. And of course, this is the proscribed process of sacrifice. Just as the sages were doing a great fire sacrifice, it was actually at the end of Dwapara Yuga, I guess at the beginning of Kali Yuga, kind of right at that time. Now, of course, that sacrifice is Sankirtan Yuga, the Yuga Dharma. So for today, the Harinam Sankirtan is probably more potent than the fire sacrifice of the sages. Not that, in other words, because it wouldn't be as appropriate for us to just to try to do fire sacrifices to relieve the suffering, because that's not Lord Chaitanya's instruction. That's not the Yuga Dharma. Lord Chaitanya came and he told us this is the sacrifice for the sage, congregational chanting of the holy name. So I was just thinking, yesterday Madhavati was talking about commentaries and why do we need commentaries on the Bhagavatam, because the Bhagavatam itself says it's complete unto itself. And so that discussion was there about commentaries. And I was thinking that without Srila Prabhupada's commentary, we would not, in a sense, bring this up to date. Srimad Bhagavatam was written 5,000 years ago. Lord Chaitanya appeared 500 years ago. So Prabhupada, as he always does expertly throughout his purports, he tells us, how does this apply to us today? Because otherwise, we read about a fire sacrifice in Naimisharanya, it might not mean very much to us. So Prabhupada is telling us, yes, the sacrifice is important. This is, you know, there must be sacrifice for Krishna. And today, following Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the sacrifice is the Sankirtan Yuga, that we chant the holy names as the process of self-realization and also the process that's going to give the greatest benefit to humanity. And Prabhupada says so many times what benefit there was to everyone through the process of bhakti yoga, the process of chanting the holy names, the process of distributing these books that were giving people spiritual knowledge. And this benefits everyone. So by chanting Hare Krishna, performing devotional service, we are indeed watering the root of the tree. And thus, the world benefits. All the branches, twigs, leaves, and flowers will also benefit. So our world suffers from a lack of true kindness, true friendship, in the way that was displayed by the sages. This lack of friendship in the world, lack of true kindness, is only due to a lack of spiritual consciousness. It's due to a lack of knowledge of spiritual equality of every living entity. It's due to our lack of knowledge of God as Krishna, as the loving father of all living entities. It's due to a lack of sacrifice the idea of service, of offering back to Krishna. And that lack of knowledge of devotional service means that we don't know the real remedy, because the sacrifice to Krishna, Sankirtan Yajna, is the remedy for all individual problems and all of society's ill. So the performance of Sankirtan, of this great movement that Srila Prabhupada brought and inaugurated in the Western world, is giving the great benefit not only to each individual, but to the collective society and culture as a whole. Stop at that point. Are there any other commentaries? Ron Govindapur?
I was thinking that Madhu Jagadambini, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, as he mentioned very nicely, that compassion means he has a knowledge and he has a willingness to relieve the suffering of others. So I was contemplating on that, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that by the power of sadhana bhakti, when one comes to make his heart free from all material desire, at that time, because he's not looking anything for himself, he has the ability to hear and see others, then the compassion arises. Uh-huh. I thought it was very scientifically.
Yeah.
And then
so just because we don't have the microphone, you're saying that when one is free from material desires,
by the power of sadhana,
by the power of sadhana, at that time, then real compassion arises.
Because he can hear at that time and see, because he has nothing for himself.
Uh-huh.
He's not looking.
He can hear and see, hear and see the condition of others, because he no longer has material desire.
All
right. Great. Thank you very much. Nice. Sugata? I think we have no mark. Was it working? Oh, okay.
When you were talking about engaging people, Jayananda came to mind. He was so expert at engaging people in little ways, helping with a cart, or when he would go to the market and get donations for the temple, fruit and vegetables. And when he passed away, so many people showed up at his funeral, because he had genuine love for the people. Of course, people can feel that, if you actually have that love for them, and they respond. And I was thinking how the other day was at Aldi's, and you have to have a quarter to put in to get a card out.
Yeah.
I didn't have a quarter yet, but I think it's coming back from Harnam. So this woman, she looked very poor, But she came up, she goes, here's a quarter, So, the fact that I had a sarian, I thought that Krishna...
She's doing devotional service.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, there's so many different little ways, that people can be engaged, and they help you, change your flat tire, whatever it might be. It's kind of unlimited ways. And when you're talking about tolerating, I remember hearing... One devotee came, was complaining to Prabhupada about another devotee, and Prabhupada said, if you cannot tolerate, what is the difference between the people outside and us?
Mm.
There's no difference if you can't tolerate, so.
Something we always have to remember
yeah.
in our dealings with devotees, yes. Anything else?
Thank you, great class. I just wanted to share about this generation. I saw something so encouraging on my phone. I saw something so encouraging for this generation. Over 10,000 young people marching in Germany for animal rights, protesting slaughterhouses.
For animal
rights.
And
there's a growing number of they're not becoming vegan just because they want to be healthy. It's because they really care about the animals and the creation. And God. So there's a lot of really good stuff going on out there.
There really is, and these are all very positive signs. I like to think that this is somewhat the result of our efforts over 45, 50 years of Sankirtan and book distribution, that we do see that there is some piety also arising in this golden age of Kali. So that's to be expected. And I was thinking about this, because I was thinking about this thing about generations and whether it's always the same, or whether it's, because sometimes we see some of our newest generation has some of these qualities of seeming to be more active. And isn't that, I just saw something in the paper that this big spokesperson for global warming is a 16-year-old girl from Sweden or something, you know. So yeah, I mean, and I was thinking that back in the 60s, when we were all very socially active, was also the time when we had this great surge of devotees being made. So when it seems like when people are looking for something a little beyond themselves to become less self-centered, that's a very, very good opportunity for them to look for higher answers, to look for spiritual life. And that's, of course, where we have the opportunity to present that to them. Yeah, I think these things are all very positive. And vegetarianism is just exploding. I mean, it's growing everywhere. You know, it's like, yeah.
Even veganism, because they know the dairies are so bad. Like cows are treated. They don't want to take dairy.
Yeah, yeah.
There's so few good dairy that are in them, you know?
I'm not going to go there, but yeah, no, I see your point. Okay.
I have one question.
Okay.
I mean, I understand something of it, but I want to hear your opinion.
So one angle, one has to perform bhakti, sadhan bhakti. Then Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, he will assume the bhakti enters in the heart by practicing sadhana. Then four things will appear in the heart automatically. The first thing is dunya, humility. Appears. At the same time, we are also saying, well, we need to develop humility. We need to develop humility. Not a joking, but it seems like joking. Whenever I ask Radhanath Maharaj, how did you develop this humility? I was imitating, I was pretending. But I went so long, it became a natural to be humble.
Well, and that's also part of his humility, describing it that way, probably. But there is really something to that. We are performing sadhana, which means practice, right? You know, I'm not realizing Krishna directly in his holy name, but I'm going to keep chanting my rounds enough, and eventually I hope I will realize it, right? It works. You know, more and more eventually we come that way. So in the same way that if we try to exhibit qualities, good qualities of devotees, they do become more and more natural. We do begin to appreciate them, and as we become purified, they become more real. In other words, I'm not saying that we should be faking good qualities, but yeah, I mean, why not try to act on the best behavior of a Vaishnava? You know, why not try to our best to act as Prabhupada would and would want us to act in that way? And I think that there's something to what you said, it does become habitual, right? It becomes just kind of the way we do things. You do things long enough and that becomes, you sort of reprogram or recondition yourself to respond in a certain way.
Like Mother Sukada mentioned, was similar. Inside the airplane, when everybody was smoking and Sudhakirti Prabhu saw it and he could not take it, but Prabhupada did not say anything. Mm-hmm. But at one point, Sudhakirti Prabhu went little out of like air hostess to stop the smoking near Prabhupada, and then Prabhupada said, why you act like one of them? What is the difference? So my question is, was Prabhupada tolerating like naturally, but at the same time he told Sutakirti, practice, otherwise what is the difference
right.
between the rest?
Sure, practice tolerance.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, all goes to Prabhupada.